It's an edition of Classic Martial Arts and Life. Trust you'll find it interesting and educational. If you want more content, you can find several levels of support on Patreon. And for those of you longtime supporters on Patreon, I am deeply grateful. This platform for high-level martial arts would not exist without you. Enjoy.
Come on, come on.
Listening to Martial Secrets with Lawrence Kane
and
Chris Wilder, who sounds suspiciously like your announcer.
Lawrence, how are you?
I am doing awesome.
I'm Chris Wilder, and he's
Lawrence Kane.
Hey, and you're listening to Martial Secrets. Today on Martial Secrets, we're going to talk about
the Seattle bus tunnel incident,
and we're going to talk about a training tip that you can use in your dojo.
And also handling senior students at your dojo.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too. And also, we're going to do a little section I like to call free space, which is, in this instance, it happened at the stadium. And this
Ooh.
Is where, yeah, Lawrence gets to tell stories. But first, I want to take a minute, and I want to talk to you about Martial Secrets. Martial Secrets started, I think, what, 5, 6 years ago?
Something like that,
yeah. And it was just me doing long-form interviews with people. Steve Barnes, the author.
Rory Miller, yeah. Ian Abernathy, I think, right?
Yeah, did Ian. Hirohito Sensei. Those turned out really, really pretty well. And then, technology changed and lives changed and everything, and that went by the way. Then I kind of tried to do just kind of a little monologue version of it, and that didn't really go as well as I'd like. So here we are with Martial Secrets some 6 years later, back up on the air, and
it's alive
and we're going to be here with some consistency and hopefully a rigor and verve as this goes. Let's talk about that first topic, which was the Seattle bus tunnel. You want me to kind of
do a quick refresher on
that? All right, well, in Seattle there's a bus tunnel. It's underground, the bus come in and all of this, and they the city has hired what you would say,
rent-a-cops?
Yeah, rent-a-cops, security guys. And their job is to observe and report. And a bunch of girls get in this throwdown, and this one gal gets beat up, and it gets on video. And the rent-a-cops do what they're supposed to do. They did precisely what their contract told them to do, which was to observe and report. They're not supposed to intervene in this thing. I mean, they're not armed or anything.
Right, and I think a key incident point on that was that, since the video went viral, most people have seen that. But just as a refresher, or for those who haven't, it was like 4 or 5 on one, and one girl was down and others were kicking her. And that's a pretty dangerous situation. And part of the brouhaha over that was that the security guys didn't do anything. They just picked up a radio.
Yeah, which is precisely what their contract mandates that they do.
You got it.
But then the gal that got beat down, she wound up on like the Today Show and crying about the beating and everything. Well, in a matter of about 48 hours, it became known that she had a couple pending cases for assault and robbery against her and so forth. And the media sort of dropped the ball. Well, didn't drop the ball. They dropped her like a hot potato. Is what they
yeah,
did.
They sure did.
It was a big brouhaha. And in fact, I believe, and I might be wrong on this, Lawrence, but I think that the contract with the rent-a-cop company was terminated.
You know, they talked about doing that. I don't remember if they actually pulled the trigger on it or not, but yeah, they certainly did. It's a really interesting study in handling violence, though, because first off, in a situation like that where it's multiple assailants, that's pretty much a losing proposition. And when one person's down and others are, putting the boots to the head, unless they're little kids, someone's going to get seriously hurt almost every time. And so part of the issue was, how could these guys possibly stand there and do nothing? And, it's a pretty damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Because your contract says you don't go hands-on. but you also have the whole ethical thing, moral thing about can you watch?
Oh, you know what? Maybe they didn't lose their contract, but I think the employees got. I think the employees that were present there, I think they got terminated.
That might be what it is. You know, I've had similar instances because at the stadium, technically, you know, we don't make arrests. We're not allowed to go hands-on except in self-defense, you know, personal of ourselves, not to other folks. And, you know, same thing. You pick up the radio, you call the guys with the guns and the badges because that's their job. They got pepper spray. They got tasers. They got tools that we don't. Well, honestly, I've had situations and, you know, I'll categorically disavow this, of course, but I've had situations where, you know, one guy's on the ground wrestling with another guy, friends come in, start putting the boots to the head. I'm not going to stand by and wait for someone to get there 2, 3, 5 minutes later. You know, I'm going to intervene.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's can you live with yourself or not?
I think that's part of what the issue was, is that with that up on the on YouTube and everybody looking at that viral video, everybody was like, well, why isn't somebody intervening? Because I think at their core, they were saying, man, somebody's getting beat down. This is not even remotely fair. And as fairness comes into these things, and not even remotely fair, and somebody ought to do something. So, you know, there was this collective yell across the interweb thingy-mabob of, hey, somebody ought to do something. And so then the politicians had to get involved, and away we went.
Of course. And, you know, it's really easy to, you know, Monday morning quarterback this sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that term doesn't really work with Monday Night Football anymore, does it?
But, no.
Be that as it may, it's really easy when you're not there. Violence happens very, very quickly. You have microseconds to maybe seconds to make a decision.
Well, and
right?
You're right. And bullies are not going to commit an act in front of somebody who can take action. They're just not going to do that. I mean, they know that these guys, and of course we're using the pejorative rent-a-cop, but I mean, it's a job and they're doing their job just like anybody else is doing their job. And I commend them for going out and getting a paycheck. But, you know, these punks, they know that these guys aren't going to do anything. They're going to call, and by the time something with real authority arrives, they're gone.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, a lot of bad stuff can happen in just a few seconds or a few minutes, and they know they've got the time to do that. One of the other things, though, it's kind of interesting, is let's say it had gone the other way around. Let's say somebody had waded in, and, you know, when you've got multiple assailants, depending on the circumstances, you may actually have a warranted lethal force situation. So, you know, it's 4 or 5 on 1. It's very clear, you know, at the time who's doing the assaulting. Now, remember, this girl had a real long background. You know, she had the rap sheet and all that. And we don't know what led up to that incident exactly. But it could very well be that she wasn't nearly as innocent as it appeared on that tape.
Well,
you don't know that going in, right?
Yeah, but nobody deserves a boot to the head.
Well, of course,
you know, but I mean, we agree on that,
right? But my point is the Monday morning quarterbacking thing is that let's say somebody did go in and the perpetrators turned on the security guy, and now all of a sudden it's 3, 4, 5 on 1, and you know maybe he's got a knife or a gun or something he's not supposed to have on the job and uses it. You know, that goes south pretty quickly. Well, in a normal situation, that could very well be a clean shoot. Let's say it's a shoot. But because he's on the job, he's minimum going to get fired, right? The company's going to get sued. It's going to go, you know. So the point is, it's a little bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of tough. You know, how bad do you need the job? Do you need the job bad enough to go intervene? And,
well, are you
maybe
willing
you're
to
hero,
lose,
maybe you're goat.
Are
right?
you willing to lose your job over a punk who does not care?
Exactly.
And let's just take this, you know, excuse me, just a little bit further. Is that the same girl was involved in another fight. I want to say it was the bus tunnel again, but I'm not sure about that. But I know she was involved in another altercation that involved multiple people about 6 weeks after this event.
Right. I don't think it was in the bus tunnel again, but yeah. So, I mean, you know, one of the challenges, obviously, is if you hang out with the wrong people, eventually you're going to get in a fight. I mean, it just works that way,
yeah.
Right? So she's got associations that are going to get her in trouble if she doesn't change them, right?
Yeah, it's like my aunt used to say, if you lie down with dogs, you wake up with fleas. So that's that.
True.
Now it's time for the training tip. And one of the things that I've found as a person that is running a dojo And I, you know, I don't care whether that's like at a YMCA gymnasium or, you know, if you have a, if you have a building and a professional dojo, like I do. I mean, I'm not insinuating that having one at a Y is not a professional dojo. I mean, it's just a, it's a different business.
Well, the definition structure. Of professional is getting paid, right?
Well, I mean, you know, you go to the Y, they're going to pay you. You know,
yeah.
I mean, so
and
there
you
go. And
there can be quality instruction there.
Yeah.
And hell, just, you started there.
Yeah. It's just a different, business structure. But,
yeah.
But anyway, what I wanted to talk about was the, you know, how do you as an instructor, keep what you're doing, on it, you know, the edge actually of what you're doing in regard to your training. You're not training yourself out of shape.
Yeah, that's really a challenge because, you know, the vast majority of students tend to be lower ranks. And so, you know, the stuff that you teach at the bottom, the intro level kata, the, you know, the fundamental stuff, you tend to spend all your time teaching that. And, you know, if you've got, say, what, 4, 5, 6 classes a day, maybe one of them's advanced students and the rest of them are all intro, right?
I got a friend that, you know, he, well, in our system, you know, we do Gigsai Kata Daiichi, Gigsai Kata Daini at the beginning forms. And, he will not accept anything other than black belts anymore because he said to me, I'm not teaching Gigsai again, ever again. I'm not teaching it again. And I was like, yeah, all right. You know, I mean, cause it is a triangle. I mean, you know, you got more white, more yellow, more green belts. And as you move up through that triangle, you know, it becomes less and less. And of course you get exposure to less of that material.
Well, it's an interesting perspective though, because, you know, Gigsai Kata is very basic. It's really simple to learn, but you know, then you get to the whole thing about have you mastered it, right? There's so many fundamentals, all the stuff that's found in Sanchin, right? That's all in Gigsai. And there's some techniques in there that are very useful. I've used them in real life.
Well, is it safe to say that I haven't mastered Gigsai, but I've pretty much had it up to my gunnels with it?
That's fair enough. yeah.
Well, so what I try to do is I try to spend a little bit of time prior to class doing some stuff. And it might be only 15 minutes. It might be only 10. And then sometimes I'll stay after I close down the dojo. Everybody thinks I've gone home, but I stay a little bit and I spend some time on what I want to spend. And I don't really necessarily say, oh, I'm going to do a half an hour or I'm going to do 15. I just do a little bit because all of it adds up.
Yeah. And that's really important though, because, you know, if you get too focused on what you're teaching everybody else, sometimes you lose the point of why you're doing this and you can burn out on it.
Oh, yeah, that's instructor burnout is, well, that's an entirely different topic for another time. Let's not open that up because that could be 7 shows in.
Well, true, yeah, you're right. But, you know, to your point, though, the doing a little bit before, doing a little bit after, spend a little time yourself working on the thing or the things that you really need to do, that's a big deal. And some of it is, you know, experimenting with some section of the kata, for example. You know, I don't know what this means. People have asked me. I don't have a really good explanation for it. You know, let me figure it out. I'm going to spend some time figuring that out. Right?
No, and that's the thing, too, is that, you know, I mean, I adopted this a long time ago. I won't go through an entire kata of my own accord frequently. I mean, I do. Don't get me wrong. But I'll just take a section, just like you suggested, and I'll spend my time on that, and I'll really, you know, start tearing that apart and start thinking about, you know, where's my balance? Where are my feet? How am I distributed here? And that's where that 15 minutes or that 10 minutes or half hour, whatever it is I'm going to spend, is going to be.
Right. That's really useful because it helps you kind of, you know, not only get way below that surface level stuff into some of the real depth, but, you know, sometimes you can also grab someone, you know, I know there's been some times after class you've said, you know, hey, Lawrence, you got an extra 15 minutes or whatever?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, sure. And, you know, sometimes you can really rock and roll on that stuff, right?
Yeah, that usually begins with a, hey, watch this, you know, which I will say this. You remember one of my black belts, he went off to college, and I think it was probably his last or second last class. And I told him, I said, Devin, listen, when you go off to college, I said, you know, there's a lot of advice people give you, but I'm going to give you one piece of advice, and that is that if you ever hear the phrase, hey, watch this, or it's okay, I do it all the time, and there's beer involved, you go the other way, because nothing good is going to come of this.
Yeah, that will not end well.
Yeah. All right. And you know, I'll tell you what else, too, is that sometimes, you know, if it's a small advanced class, if I have, you know, just a handful of black belts there, you know, I'll have them train what I want to train.
Yeah.
And they're okay with that because, of course, I don't announce it as such a thing. I say we're going to do this, but it's an opportunity for them to learn some more advanced things and for me to do what I want to do, and everybody's happy too. So,
oh, absolutely. You know, I've actually done that occasionally. You know, we've had some times even with the entry level classes where you've got four or five people show up and. You know, just like, for example, when I did the class on control techniques, it's not something that's really in the kata, it's not really in the curriculum, but, you know, that's kind of fun.
But I'll tell you what, that class, it was a small class because I think we were going into the holidays,
yeah,
so
we
people were starting. But I never saw a bunch of jacked up kids. I mean, these, you know, these are teenage guys, young men, and by the time they got done with the control techniques, there was a series of guys holding their elbows and their wrists and grinning and laughing and going, let me try this again. So that was a good thing. So
oh, yeah.
There's your training tip. A little bit before, sometimes a little bit during, definitely a little bit after. Now it's time for At the Dojo. Senior students, Lawrence, tell me about them.
You know, it's an interesting thing. We talked a little bit earlier about you know, how instructors can kind of get to where they're having some challenges finding something new. Senior students are a little bit the same, but they also have a really unique opportunity, and that is helping to really figure out the depth of what they've learned by teaching it to somebody else.
You know, I have. You know, like Jeff, I've known Jeff since, I think, 1988 or 89, I think. And, you know, he always brings something new to the dojo. I mean, this guy's diligent. I mean, he drives from, you know, essentially Tacoma to get to Seattle, which is, you know, it's a good 40-minute drive.
That's assuming good traffic.
Assuming good traffic, yeah. But, you know, I'll just say, hey, Jeff, what do you got tonight? And he's like, well, this is what I was working on, and this is what I was thinking about. It's like, okay, man, that sounds fantastic. Let's do it. And you know, the thing of it is, and it's the same thing with Scott Schweitzer. When he comes, you know, he'll do some things. And, you know, I've known Scott since 1979. I mean, that's when we met in the dojo. And Scott is a different brain type than I am. Jeff is a different brain type than I am. You are a different brain type than I am. And, man, it's great because I think it makes the technique and the student stronger to have that kind of.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's not just a learning style and that sort of thing, but the, I mean, there's been times I remember, you know, when I think I was a green belt at the time, there was something I was really struggling with and you kept trying all these different ways to explain it to me and it just wasn't working. And I happened to be, training with Scott a little bit. And we were doing some weapon stuff, which was completely different. And all of a sudden, something he said there clicked, and all of a sudden, the open hand technique was working for me.
Yeah.
And it's because it was just a completely different perspective. We were working on Kabuto, not karate. But, you know, it was one of those, oh, that's what Chris was trying to get to. And absolutely, yeah, the different perspective is really helpful. And sometimes you get that from seminars. Sometimes you get that just from senior folks, you know?
Yeah, well, arguably, sometimes when I'm communicating, I do so with the deft of a drunk ace freely. So, you know, I don't know that.
Normally I speak fluent Chris Wilder.
Yeah,
so, you know.
Yeah, yeah. A grunt, a point, and a little swirl in the air, and it's like, oh, yeah, I don't need to write that. So, you know, if you're an instructor out there and, you know, you're shouldering the whole burden, man, get your seniors involved. I mean, it's not open dojo by any means. I mean, sometimes, you know, I've got some other black belts that they're like, well, what do you want me to do? And if I can give them a structure, then they put their own flair on it, and it's super. You know, some people need the guidance, and that's okay. And other people are like, get out of my way. I got this.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, you know, the key thing is that everybody should be learning at least some little new thing every time they go to class, right? And it's really, the senior students can learn by teaching. The junior students can learn by having a different perspective and a different instructor. And it's really something that's beneficial to everybody. You don't want to take it overboard, though, right? You don't want to make it that you've got a bunch of senior guys who are doing all your work for you, you know, is free labor. that's not what we mean by that. But certainly, giving folks an opportunity to help participate, to come up with something new, fun, different, and it helps everybody. Right?
Yeah, and another thing that I've done too, and this has worked really well, is I've planted it. I've said, you know, hey, listen, on this class, you know, I need you to teach. You're gonna be coming in, so bring something. And you know, with a week or two lead, it gives them time to think of it. But then I'm also notorious for walking up to somebody while they're just stretching on the floor and going, what are you going to teach tonight? So
I've been there, done that.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes I do that because and I would like to say that I do it with this great forethought and it's, you know, a deep understanding or anything. But it's just like, hey, you know what? I think it's time for this person to step up there and teach. And I want to see what they got. And I'm not really looking for a lot of preparation. And it helps me because then I'm able to look at it and go, oh, you know, they needed a little bit of this. They didn't get that. You know, and
yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Well, and let's face it, you know, people take martial arts for different reasons, but one of them that's fairly universal is self-defense. And you don't know when you're going to need to use it.
No,
so if you can pull something out and explain it to somebody else with no advanced warning, you can probably have a better chance of being able to pull it out and actually apply it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I can tell you that any instructor that's listening to this broadcast right now will say this, that they really didn't truly begin to understand their art until they started teaching it.
Absolutely.
Right? Just that's just absolute guarantee.
Yeah. Well, and that's why one of the advancement requirements that you've had is that folks, I forget what level it is, need you know, teaching is one of, what did you do that at? Begin brown belt, I think?
Yeah, it's EQ.
EQ, yeah. Yeah. That one of the advancement requirements is teaching. And it's not because, you know, people can't be good at this without doing that, but people can't be great at this without doing
that. Yeah, that's a really good point. And on that high note, we're going to end this section and move into one I like to call
Free Space.
In this instance, though, Free Space is going to be, and I wish that I had an enormous reverb to put on this, and it's called It Happened at the Stadium. For those of you who don't know, Lawrence has been working security at a major Pac-10 stadium for 26 years.
I've lost track.
Yeah, I always like it when somebody says over 26 years. It's like, well, the instant you say 26 years, it becomes over. You know, everybody always like, I've got over 12 years of experience. It's like, well, you know, this is a bone to pick. That drives me crazy, man, because it sounds to me like, it's like when I ask one of the tiny tigers, how old are you? And they say I'm 5 and a half. That's like, you know, well, when do you quit counting that? When do you just round it off, yeah, and kind of go, I'm in my 50s. You know, 12 years-ish, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. But anyway, so Pac-10 Stadium, and the stories are just are great. And not only are many of them funny, but many of them have enormous lessons attached to them. And they're great little war stories. So this is your opportunity to, you know, strap on the bayonet, grab a beer, and saunter on over to the table and listen to It Happened at the Stadium. So, Lawrence, I want you to tell the story about the guy who thought it was a good idea to punch the female cop.
Yeah, well, there's actually more than one of those, but I think I know which one you're thinking of. So this was close to the end of a game. It was probably in the last 5 minutes of the game, maybe. And this guy was somewhere between resting and passed out in the east end zone, kind of leaning up against the bleachers. And one of my captains walked over and tried to check on him, just make sure.
Now, where's a captain sit in this hierarchy?
Oh, okay. Good point. So we have the regular staff, and we call them nowadays we call them customer service personnel.
Oh,
so we've become politically correct.
I'm feeling the hug right now.
Oh yeah,
you feel
oh,
it?
Yeah,
I've
that's
felt
right.
It.
Well, you know, people are paying a lot of money to go watch a game, and we want to, you know, our job is to make sure they have fun.
Yeah,
now sometimes
yeah,
it means throwing other people out of the stadium so that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But enforcing rules and whatnot. But anyway, so. So from the regular folks, then we've got captains and then supervisors. So I'm a supervisor, and I've got a few captains that work for me and a bunch of employees. And so what happened is this guy was probably, I'd guess, early 50s maybe. And, you know, she's a little worried, you know, geez, this guy, you know, did he just have a heart attack or something? So she goes over.
The guy's kind of passed out. Is that the
He's leaning up against the side of the, he's not actually in the seat, but he's actually leaning up against the side of the bleachers.
Yeah, because heart attacks are a serious, I mean, they happen.
At the stadium. Yeah. We've had, I think the high number was 12 in one game.
Wow,
and
that's
usually
amazing.
Average two or three. Well, you know what? So actually the best place in the country, odds wise, if you have a heart attack, you want to have one there.
Yeah. But anyway, so I mean, these are some of the things that she's assessing as she's going through this process.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So she gets over there and she's like, you know, just the shoulder tap thing that you're taught in American Red Cross first aid. You know, hey, you okay? You know, you okay? Well, she starts and comes up swinging. And he didn't really hit her so much as push her, mm-hmm. but she fell back and cracked her head up against the side of the bleachers and ended up being treated in the hospital for whiplash, actually, not for the head injury.
Wow.
But, so she fell pretty hard. Well, there were, you know, because it was close to the end of the game, we were already starting to line the edges of the field because depending on who won, it was a close game at the time. We figured somebody was going on the field, right? This was an Apple Cup.
Yeah, the one guy.
At least. As it turned out in that particular game, it was a few hundred. But, you know, you get the point. So we'd had, there were several cops that were real close. And the first one who got there was a female state patrol officer. So, you know, she's just seen somebody assault one of my employees, comes running over there. And, you know, gets in the guy's face and tries to.
Now, she's in full trooper regalia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
she's
with got the vest, you know, and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's got Smokey Bear hat, carrying the gun, you know, the whole thing. I mean, very obviously a state trooper. And she's pretty big. She's, I don't know, maybe 5'10", 5'11". I mean,
well, in Washington State, there is a height requirement for a state trooper, is there not?
Well, there used to be, but I don't think there still is.
Because
some of them are a lot shorter than they used to be.
Yeah,
but, I mean, she's close to 6 feet tall and, you know, with her all of her gear and everything, you know, she's pretty,
this becomes a formidable person, with skills.
She's a sergeant, and you know, she's got one of those little things about marksmanship on her lapel, so you know,
I could hit you here.
There you go. So anyway, she comes over and, you know, immediately gets between the guy and the lady that he's hit, and you know, either he's just totally out of it or stupid or way too drunk or something. But, instead of, backing off when the trooper comes, he goes ahead and hauls off and smacks her. And, she partially blocked it, but, you know, it was a pretty good shot. And, you know, it made her head rock back. And, she took about a half step backward. And before she recovered, three other officers were on this guy. He was on the ground and passed back out again, or maybe knocked back out again. It was maybe second and a half. So, you know, it's not only is it a bad idea to swing on a cop, but, you know, there's still that level of chivalry thing. And if you swing on a lady cop, it's probably going to go worse for you than if you swing on a guy cop, when there's other guys watching.
I got to tell you, you know, I mean, I clearly don't have a problem with female law enforcement. I mean, they're trained, they're skilled, all of those kinds of things. But I have to say that as a man, if I saw a female cop get hit, I'm not really thinking like that's a cop anymore. I mean, this is just me. I mean, I'm still thinking it's a cop, but I'm thinking like, man, you know, you don't hit women.
Yeah.
And let alone a law enforcement officer.
Well, you know,
I got to say, you know, I mean, maybe you can train it out of people. I don't know. But I have to say that's the way I'd respond. I mean, it would be a very gut reaction.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they took him down fast and hard and had him in cuffs. And they took him down actually hard enough that I'm not sure if they knocked him out or if he, you know, was just passed out again. But I'm pretty sure they knocked him out just from taking him to the ground.
I'm going
to
guess he woke up in jail.
He came around before they walked him out. But, yeah, he was definitely there. There's two things that happen when you do something stupid at the stadium. You either get thrown out and you get your ticket taken away from you and you can't come back in. And that's technically is an arrest. Or you get the nice shiny silver bracelet and a ride downtown. He got the latter. And we know, you know, it doesn't end well when you assault an officer. And especially, you know, one of the things that's really sad about that is this is a guy in his probably early 50s, late 40s. This is not a college student. This is not somebody who has an excuse at, you know, what was it, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon to be drunk off his ass.
Are we talking about a felony here?
Probably. Well, it depends on if they push for that.
Yeah.
I mean,
but really, we're looking at a bad, bad situation. Okay, so anyway, to kind of wrap this up, I mean, they hauled him out and off he went and life is good. So let me get this right. The guy not only assaulted a woman stadium employee, a, what do you call it, customer
The customer service captain.
She's
but, you know,
captain, yeah, yeah.
I hate that title.
Captain of industry. And then he decided that he would go ahead and supersize that assault.
Oh, yeah.
by assaulting a state trooper.
A state trooper, right.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
And then he got taken down by two other state troopers and two UW police officers.
Okay, well, there you go, kids. There's your lesson for the day. The end of free space, and it happened at the stadium. Lawrence, it's been a good little podcast, and I think we got to close this thing, and all I've got to say is I want everybody to be well out there.
Yep, be safe.
All right, and thanks for listening.
Nice work.
Hi, this is Chris Wilder from Marshall Secrets. Marshall Secrets is free, but it's not costless. So tell your friends about Marshall Secrets. Your good words are the best endorsement we can have. Also, if you like what you hear, buy one of our books. Buy one of our DVDs. We think they're pretty good, and we think you'll find value in them, too. As always, we appreciate you listening and your support. You can find us pretty quickly by just going to Amazon.com, typing in Lawrence Kane or Chris Wilder, and you can find all of our books and DVDs there. Thanks for listening, and be well.